This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Politicians, policy, and what's happening in Parliament. It's our politics professional on Joy Drive.
This week has been a whirlwind in Australian federal politics. The long-standing coalition between the Liberal and National parties has officially split after nearly an 80-year partnership. Meanwhile, Labor's National Secretary, Paul Erickson, took to the National Press Club to detail the strategy behind the party's historic election victory. To unpack these developments, Noah Seckham joins us now. Noah, welcome back to Joy Drive.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Latham.
So, well, I was actually thinking, because we chatted just before the election when I was hosting for Warren, and we're saying how a bit lacklustre and a bit dull the election campaign had been. And after the fallout from the election, wow, that's been very interesting.
It has. We've seen two leaders of parties get kicked out, and now we're seeing all these shenanigans with the coalition. I mean, truly, it's exhausting. We'd really love a break.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I mean, it's evolving as we speak, but I'll dive into the first one, which is around the coalition breakdown. The formal split between the Liberals and Nationals, what were the key factors that led to this fracture?
Well, the difficulty with this is we don't really know, because each side has cited a different reason as to why they've agreed to split for now. So the Nationals, when they announced that they were doing this on Tuesday morning, they said it was over four policy areas that the Liberal Party, you know, wouldn't agree to immediately. They were saying that this was a shame, particularly off the back of the election, where they'd actually campaigned on a lot of these things. Mm. And the four that they've mentioned are the nuclear reactor policies, the forcing retailers and supermarkets to divest part of their profile if they're in breach of competition law, introducing a $20 billion regional fund, which essentially just is to cover infrastructure projects for the regions, and a policy to require minimum phone access standards in regional remote areas. Mm-hmm. So there's four policies that, I mean, some of them we have heard in the past, but some of them, like including that mobile phone one, less so, but it isn't necessarily controversial. So this idea that the Liberals don't support that seemed quite surprising as of Tuesday morning. And then Tuesday afternoon, we heard from opposition leader Susan Lee saying that it was around, that they couldn't come to an agreement on cabinet solidarity, essentially saying that if they come to a position on something, that they will all agree to it. And she said that the Nationals were actually seeking an exemption from that so they could split off and do whatever they want, which is what they did do with the Voice referendum by speaking out against that pretty much straight away. So those two different reasons from both sides encouraged the split on Tuesday. And now 2 days on, there are now whisperings that they've paused their shadow cabinet appointments so that they can negotiate further to maybe bring the coalition back together.
Yeah, and I was actually watching also too, so Bridget McKenzie, who's the Nationals leader in the Senate, had said that it was only about those four things. And then apparently Sarah Ferguson from 7:30 received a text message during the interview from Susan Lay's office saying that that wasn't correct. How significant is that rupture in relationship, or is that even a rupture?
I mean, it's certainly a miscommunication. There is some sort of disconnect between the two parties at the moment. And this morning, we even saw a leaked letter from Bridget McKenzie to her Liberal counterpart, Michaelia Cash, saying, oh, look, if we can't agree on things after Jacinta Price had defected and that, you know, the Nationals were down to four senators in the upper house, that could take away their party status, that, you know, they may split. And so that kind of suggested this a week before it ended up happening. So now there's this feeling that, you know, not only has a letter been leaked, not only are they going on TV and being corrected by the journalist on air, that there's this, the trust certainly isn't in the best position ever. And this idea of coalition unity has been thrown out pretty quickly. But there have been some who said straight after the election that this idea of the coalition being an entirely united front isn't necessarily the best thing for them anyway, because what has happened is that the Nationals, who are a separate party, of course, within the coalition, have begun dictating a lot of these major policies beyond perhaps their fair representation within the party. But in the sake of unity, no one has spoken out against it. So they're now, of course, the Liberal Party is in the process of reviewing their own policies, what went wrong and where they're going to go from here. But there's certainly going to be an aspect of that which will look at, okay, which of the Nationals' policies have actually ruined the Liberals in their inner city efforts or even suburban seats that they've all lost. So there's certainly a lot of reflection that needs to come from this and figure out whether or not unity is actually the end goal or whether or not there is a lot of an identity that the Liberal Party needs to figure out for itself.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, well, Susan Lee was actually quite open about that as part of reviewing all the policies, etc. But yeah, clearly it's cheesed off the National Party, that particular point. If you're just tuning in, this is Joy Drive, and I'm speaking with Noah Seckham from National Radio News about the latest in federal politics. With the coalition split, how might this affect the balance of power in the House of Representatives and the Senate, and particularly in the Senate as far as, you know, keeping the, I won't say the B word, but keeping them honest as far as, you know, the Labor government?
Well, as far as the balance of power goes, we're in for a very boring 3 years in the lower house where it's this massive 94-seat majority for Labor. So they really don't have to worry too much in there. But yeah, in the Senate, at the way that the Senate count is currently at, we're still waiting on, I believe, 4 or 5 seats. But the current count shows that the government can work directly with the Greens without having to negotiate with the crossbench. And if the coalition go through with this split, the Liberals could work with the government on things like environment and energy policy without actually having to negotiate with the Nationals at all. And as it is, we need to remember that the Nationals in the Senate only have 4 seats. Their power is largely in the lower house where they hold about 15. So they've really been frozen out of any of the major decision-making circles, especially if they go through with this decision to completely split from the party, because then they don't have access to, you know, shadow ministries and working with the official opposition. So it is a strange shot in the foot, to be honest. And from what I've heard from speaking with a lot of the people in these national seats is that they're actually really disappointed that this is taking priority, because a large quantity of national seats at the moment are facing either drought in Victoria or these floods on the coast of New South Wales. And so while these things are happening, they're talking about their own infighting issues. Obviously, the MPs in these areas are on the ground helping, but to see this sort of tussle, this tug of war playing out this week has been a bit of a letdown for a lot of these communities that are wanting more from their MPs at the moment.
Yeah, probably highlighting the grubbiness of politics. Yeah, that's the it does. The optics are probably not great for those national members. Just sort of switching gear a little bit. So we had Paul Erickson address the National Press Club. So Paul Erickson was the campaign director for the Labor Party. Was that?
Yes.
And so he gave a few little bits and pieces into the campaign and Labor's strategy. Are there any key takeaways from that particular press club visit?
Well, the interesting thing with Paul Erickson being this kind of distant, I suppose manipulator is a bit harsh, but distant orchestrator of the Labor campaign is that he has this gap between obviously what he works on and politics itself. From what he's said to other mastheads, that he has no intention of running as a politician, and yet he is fully geared to, you know, making politics work for the Labor Party. In terms of his speech earlier this week, the focus was particularly on how the Labor Party was able to effectively target the Peter Dutton as, you know, an aggressive character, which he says the numbers and their own internal polling showed was turning voters away. And he did give some advice to the Liberal Party, who are now, of course, trying to rebuild. He said he urged them to stop talking to their own echo chambers, to staying in the same sort of friendly media circles, because it echoes that whole idea of you can't win government without winning the centre. And so he's really saying that that's where Labor was able to swoop in and win, because they were able to win over those people that were quite disaffected by the Liberals. So, yeah, it was interesting to get a brief insight into, you know, how it worked and where they put their attention and their efforts. But it was it's certainly one of those stories that feels very insider trading, you know. It's a very niche topic that doesn't necessarily interest the entire country.
Yeah, but still, I mean, agreeing some of those statements he made and some of the tactics that they undertook, it was like, whoa, okay, this is how it works. And then, of course, we also had something that got a little bit less attention, but still just as important to so many people out there, was the RBA's recently reduced the cash rate by 25 basis points. What are your thoughts on the timing and magnitude of this decision?
Well, it's certainly another feather in the cap for Labor. It certainly looks as though their talk of managing the economy and getting things in a better position seems to be working out for them. You know, the Reserve Bank has changed its forward estimates of where they think inflation is going. They're suggesting things are looking a bit better than they were a year ago. So there's certainly a bit of optimism. But I think one of the most fascinating features of this particular rate cut is the fact that it comes before the new parliament has even sat. And, I mean, we had another rate decision during the middle of the election campaign, and we're due to have another one before parliament returns on the 22nd of July. So there's this three-month sort of period where politics cannot have much of an influence on the RBA decision at all, which really, I think, shows, you know, how a lot of it is based on these global pressures, the danger and the confusion around some of Donald Trump's tariff sort of policies, and less so the individual decisions of governments in Australia, which has certainly been something that both major parties have been, you know, hounding the other one about, saying, the only reason that things are good is because you're cheating the system by introducing energy rebates. But to see that, you know, broadly, when we're having this kind of break from politics actually working, we're seeing that, yeah, rates are still coming down. Certainly a lot of relief for a lot of mortgage holders across the country, and hopefully signs of good things to come. Apparently we're due for another three cuts within the next 12 months.
Oh, well, I'm sure there are many households and many people listening will just be jumping for joy. Perhaps not if you've got savings or retirement, but for those who are paying off mortgages, absolutely, this is great news. Noah, as always, thank you for your insightful analysis.
Always a pleasure.
And I understand that Warren also lets you go out with a song of your choice. So what is the song choice for you today?
Well, I hope you've got it. I'm asking for an Australian classic from Christy Allen, but it's not one of her hits. It's a real deep cut. We're being real alternative here. If we're going to Count Me Out, that'd be great to really round out the whole national shenanigan.
We have got it, so I'm going to play that for you now. The political landscape in Australia is shifting rapidly, and your expertise helps us make sense of these changes. We'll catch up with you again next week for more updates from Canberra.
Too easy. See ya.
You're listening to Joy Drive.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.